Are you searching for a deeper understanding of yourself and your place in the world? Do you yearn for more balance, more peace, and purpose in your life? Well, look no further than the Intuitive Revolution Podcast, your trusted source for holistic insights and intuitive guidance. I'm your host, Alicia Ferricelli, and I am ready to take you on a journey to inner peace and balanced well-being. Elizabeth Kipp is a stress management and her historical trauma specialist who uses trauma-trained and yoga-informed addiction recovery coaching, ancestral clearing, and compassionate injury and yoga to help people with their healing. Elizabeth healed from over 40 years of chronic pain, including anxiety, panic attacks, and addiction. Now in long-term recovery, she guides others to unleash their healing powers, find freedom from suffering, and live a thriving life. She is the best-selling author of The Way Through Chronic Pain, Tools to Recover Your Healing Power. Thank you, Elizabeth, for joining us today on the Intuitive Revolution Podcast. Your journey to chronic pain to recovery is incredibly inspiring. Could you share the turning point in your healing journey that led you to explore the intersections of science and spirituality?
Oh, yes. Perfect. Love the question. Thank you so much. And thank you for asking me on as a guest. So I had chronic pain, which I thought was due to an accident when I was 14. I fell off a horse, landed on a rock, and broke my fifth lumbar vertebrae in two, front to back, and the front part slipped forward into my pelvis. I got up from that accident, and it hurt. I didn't realize I'd broken anything at the time, but there was pain. It kind of followed me for the next 14 years. And finally, the doctor said, well, you know, you need surgery because we're worried that this thing is going to fall forward more off the pelvis, right? You won't be able to walk. So there was a lot of surgery there, and I had four surgeries. And anyway, after the second surgery, the doctor said to me, well, you have chronic pain and you're going to be in level 7 out of 10 pain for the rest of your life, 24/7. And I was just shocked. And I believed him in that moment. And he said, you know, here are your opiates and your benzodiazepines, that any anxiety medicine, that this is the best we've got for you to manage all of this. And I was devastated. I had a, you know, 4-year-old child and a, you know, relatively new marriage. And, you know, anyway, it was just shocking to me that most of my life was going to be like that. And I went into, I just cried for a couple of weeks, but I knew there was something not right about that prognosis.
Yeah.
It just took me a while to get to it. And I realized, you know, he's operating in a scientific paradigm and they shift. Meaning we think this is how reality is one day. And then the next day it's like, you know, somebody makes a discovery and then, oh, it's actually like this, right? So I know that happens. It's happened many times. Right, we used to think the world was flat. Well, now we see it's round. So there's still people that are flat earth society people. So I'm just saying things change.
Yeah.
The other thing was is that he pronounced it as fact. And medicine operates in science. And science is about probabilities, not facts. It's probable that. It's not black and white, right?
Yeah.
So two errors, right? And then the third one was, where do we live? Where do we heal? We live in the all that is, and we heal in the all that is. And science can only comment on that which it can measure, observe, and describe within the all that is. So that was three errors that he had made that I saw. And I realized in that moment, I was going to have to, you know, I could see science was limited in what it could offer me. And I was going to have to move outside of that for my to find the answer to my healing. And that was when the turning point was for me in that space. Yeah.
That's amazing. You came from, because most people would just accepted it and been like, well, this is my fate, gone down the path of whatever you did. But it took you, it's almost like you intuitively kind of knew that this is, something's not right. Like there is definitely some healing that I can take place on my own without having to go down more of a spiritual path than as opposed to just the scientific state, you know, facts that they give you. Yeah.
I had the advantage, pardon me, of having been trained as a research scientist. So I knew how to look at a problem from that perspective. Yeah. So I had that. But I also had the that awareness of that there's more than this, that what we can observe, measure, and describe. There's more than that. And I had learned that. I had learned that really from studying a little bit of the history of people in science, like Albert Einstein, for instance, and others. But it was more like a lived experience for me, because I remember when I was in college studying neurophysiology for the first time. It was one of the hardest courses I ever took. There's a lot of strange words and stuff, that the labels of all the different things, and then the processes, and then the pathways, and it's a lot. And anyway, it was a lot. And when I took the final exam for that course, and I came out, and I was tired, and I was just like, I made it, you know. And I asked myself this question, Elizabeth, what did you learn by putting you through yourself through all that? What did you learn, anything like of significance, right? And you know, that would like a life lesson kind of level learning,
yeah,
like labels and stuff. And I thought on that for a few minutes, and I went, yes, I did learn something. I learned that the brain is limited in what it can observe and describe and sense. And so whatever my vision is of consciousness or God or the infinite or whatever is way beyond anything I can actually get a handle on, because I have this limited 5-6 sensory, if you want to say intuition's a sixth sense, yeah, system that I'm operating in this iteration of me, right? So yeah, so I kind of had that as a baseline going into this experience, yeah, with this doctor.
That's really cool that you have that at such, you know, a younger age. I'm going through college and finishing all that up, to have that, just to have that awareness there is very profound. Yeah.
It was definitely a gift, but it was kind of like, I had a friend of mine that came over the day before I took that exam. He just came over to say, hey, and I'm in the middle of prepping for this exam, and I had my notes out on the table, and I'm gone into the kitchen to get something to drink, and he's looking at my notes while he's waiting for me to come back out, and he has not taken this course. And it was so funny, because he looked at this stuff, and I come walking into the room with his drink, and he says, Elizabeth, what are you doing to yourself? So I had his question coming out of that exam. What you just put yourself through this? What did you learn? That's kind of the context of all this.
That makes sense, because it was like, wow. When I came out, I never ever had questioned like, what did I learn? What did I gain from this? Through any classes I just took it, I was like, well, there's another check mark off my my box to, you know, for future graduation.
Well, that's true, but this was kind of next level. There was so much, there was so much involved.
Yeah, that's awesome. So with your extensive experience in the wellness space, what commonalities have you observed among chronic pain sufferers, and how has this shaped your approach to healing?
Oh, well, let's talk about the definition of chronic pain first. Just so the listeners get a handle on that. Chronic pain is any pain that's felt 15 days out of 30 for 3 months or more. So physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, it's all experienced the same by the brain. So physical trauma and loss are experienced the same in the brain, mm-hmm. same kind of pain, broken heart, broken bone. There's no difference in the brain. So that's the definition we're working with. Most people think chronic pain is just physical. It's emotional or mental or even spiritual. So what happens in the brain because of chronic pain versus acute pain? So in acute pain, we have a stress response in the body, and it's there so that when we're under threat or we actually receive a physical trauma, it goes into the on position. It puts us into a physiological state where we deal with the threat, and then the stress response goes back to normal. That's what happens in regular balanced, and acute pain would be at that level where you hurt for a while and then it gets better.
Yeah.
It gets better a little bit every day, and then the pain goes away. In chronic pain, the stress response gets stuck in the on position. It doesn't ever go off. That's why it's an issue. We're not made for that level of stress. It's very hard on the body. It creates issues with the immune system, and it creates chaos in the brain. It creates a pronounced negative mind. We're already a little bit negative. Like when something new comes into our environment, our first thing is no, to keep us safe, and then we reassess. Pardon me. So those are the things that happen in chronic pain. So we have this. It's not just no. It's like you're wrong, and I'm wrong, and everything's wrong, and we have this very negative, we get our self-esteem takes a real hit in chronic pain. You'll hear chronic pain people complain all the time or not at all. It's kind of one or the other.
I never noticed that until you mentioned that. Yeah.
That's part of the emotional center gets affected by chronic pain. So your question, what do they have in common? They have in common this hypervigilance, this chronic stress that they're experiencing, this negative mind, the brain fog, the confusion in the brain. I don't even remember what I just talked about, or I can't find my keys and I just put them down, that kind of thing. They all have that in common. We also tend to, in that state, we tend to catastrophize, and then we tend to ruminate on that. So we're not in the present moment.
Hmm.
We're constantly comparing whatever our experience is here. We're comparing it to the past and projecting into the future. So it's a place of, it's a place of a lot of fear. It can be chronic pain, pulls your attention away from is very good at it, pulls your attention away from everything but it. And so we get focused on the pain experience, to the point where we identify with the pain. We forget we're having a pain experience, but it's not who we are. And we end up being, this is now who I am, which is an error. So you see the mess that it creates. And we all have that in common. Every chronic, and I've sat in front of thousands of them, we all have that in common.
Yeah, so it's like you take an identity of, I've seen this with multiple people in my life, family-wise, as well. Is that they take their identity as that's their pain. Their pain is their identity.
Yeah.
That's who they are, and everything revolves. I can understand, you know, like everything revolves around that, but then they just really take on, it's the sadness, the depression, and the just almost an acceptance, but it's, again, it's their identity.
Yeah, so.
Here come out of their mouth.
So you, part of the ways to heal that stuckness, because you're really stuck in that, is to really understand fundamentally that you are a spiritual being having a human experience, and right now you're having a pain experience, but it's not who you are, it's the experience that you're having. And creating that distance, that witness consciousness, that's a game changer. That's a, that begins to the healing, the, from being stuck in this thing to beginning your healing journey, getting momentum in the healing.
Yeah, that makes so much sense when you come from it, from a place of knowing like this is not your, this is not your internal, like your, when you're able to separate yourself, especially I feel like emotional pain too, when you're able to separate yourself, realize you have a body, you have your mind and your spirit, as you mentioned. I was looking at it from a, you know, overlooking like with almost a 3D like experience here, like overlooking and looking at yourself from that, that aspect of it. That's very comforting.
Yeah. So those are the things we have in common. I think that was the answer to your question.
Yeah, absolutely. So your work in ancestral clearing is fascinating. Can you explain how this modality helps release intergenerational trauma and its impact on individuals today?
Well, that would be a whole podcast. But I can give you the, I can kind of give you a framework to work on this. So ancestral clearing is a trademarked and registered modality that was developed by Howard Wills and is further developed by, it was pioneered by Howard Wills and then further developed and is taught by John Newton of Health Beyond Belief. I'm one of his practitioners. So it's a focused modality in the ancestral healing space, working in ancestors. There's lots of different ways that people work with yoga, kind of works in with karma and stuff like that. Yeah. But ancestral clearing specific modality. And it's done in the present moment. The quantum physicists tell us that, that in the present moment, we can access past, present, and future all at once. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense to me that that's why this process works, because we actually do it in the present moment. That's kind of fun. The thing that people have difficulty understanding is the how is it that we carry the burdens of our ancestors? How does that work, right? But think about it in terms of evolution. And I have evolutionary biology under my belt, so I tend to think in those ways when I see, when I see certain trends and people say, well, this is the way things are. And I'm like, what's the evolutionary advantage to that? Like, there has to be one. Are we doing it, kind of thing? So think about it in terms of this. We know about DNA, the genetic material that's passed from one generation to the next. But think about it this way. What information in this environment is the next generation going to need to be ready to face the challenges that it has? Remember we talked about science being probabilities? So it's kind of like the, and I'm kind of talking theoretically here, but still you can, you come with me, right? It's like the genetic information, all the genetic information that's needed, that the organism needed in this environment to like deal with the stuff it had to deal with, it's going into the next generation. And as the next generation has slightly different things, right, there are epigenetic changes that happen that the next generation gets. So there's kind of like information flow is something like that. The monarch butterfly is not just it's not just animals, it's also like insects show it. It's not just mammals, insects show it, it's not animals. It's not just mammals, insects show it. The every fifth generation monarch butterfly makes that migratory trip. So how does that information, how do they know how to do that? How do they know where to go and how do they know what to do? Well, that's like, how does that work, right? So the information is getting passed down. And then the environment, depending on what environment, environmental influences are there, then those signals get picked up by the butterfly and off they go. When the light is right and all that, all the stuff is right for them. You see, same way, with, it's the same kind of thing. So information gets passed down. Now, Where ancestral clearing comes in is some of the information that we have right now no longer serves us. Mm-hmm. So what would it take to help us release that so it's not weighing us down so much anymore?
Yeah, we're not fighting tigers anymore.
Well, yeah, but what I love that
physical
you said
tigers.
That's true. Yes, and but the nervous system has difficulty telling the difference. It can't tell the difference between running from a tiger and not being able to pay a bill.
Right.
In this lifetime. It's got the same kind of, you know, oh my God, what's going to happen kind of thing. You know, I'm under threat now, right? So it still sees it as a threat. One of the things, another thing that it's sort of the common things that we experience in ancestral, that we work on in ancestral clearing is things like scarcity mentality. I don't have enough. I'm not enough. There's not enough. He's not enough. My job isn't, I can't, you know, all that scarcity, also abandonment, right? And also, we also have worry energy. And all those things make sense in terms of survival, right? Scarcity mentality is going to keep you on your toes to always be looking for resources kind of thing. But when it's taken to extreme and it's not needed anymore, and it's getting in the way of you accomplishing, you know, your mission, then right. this is when it becomes, it no longer serves us, right? It's getting in the way now, right? Same thing with worry energy. Well, you know, the past is done. The future hasn't happened yet. It's not set. So all we have, the only place we have to act is in the present moment. But if you're worried about what's going to happen in the future, you're wasting, you're using up a lot of energy with that worry. But we come by it honestly through, you know, there used to be tigers in the woods, you know, and cougars, and there are no cougars, but there used to be bears and lions and tigers and bears, right? So we're always in this state of watchfulness, but the question is, do we have a big charge in the nervous system around these things so that it's not serving us anymore and it's causing chronic stress? You see, so ancestral clearing helps to address those things. Yeah,
which I'm sure plays a lot in role of chronic pain for people.
Oh well, that was when I was first
fight and flight mode constantly with chronic pain. Mm-hmm. Then it
Yeah, the first time I was exposed to this, that I ever even found out about ancestral clearing, was in a chronic pain management program. That was where John was doing his work. I was like, wow, I'm so impressed. Everybody's pain level went down. And I was like, what's happening? Here I had my science hat on. I'm like, okay, I know something happened here. What was it? Is it measurable? Can he repeat it? Like, can we study? What do we have to do to study it?
Can it be explained?
All of that. My brain about 10 seconds. So it's very powerful. It's a very powerful practice to help us release charge around a hot topic that's just not serving us anymore. Yeah.
So what do you say to people who are still kind of on the edge of this ancestral trauma thing? Like, they're kind of like, I just don't believe that. Can you share a little bit more of your experience, maybe? Not trying to convince anyone to you of any of their beliefs, you know, but there are people out there listening that are probably like, well, that just sounds like a bunch of, you know, woo-woo stuff to me.
I understand that. You know, you kind of can't come to me with woo-woo. Because it'll go right over my head unless it's grounded. And then I'm like, then you got my attention. So let me put this forward. Gravity acts on you even if you don't believe in it. You don't have to believe in gravity, it still acts on you. So I'm just saying, I learned from studying science that I don't know everything, and neither does science. So it's very humbling to hear a statement from me, to hear a statement like, gravity acts on you whether you believe in it or not. And then somebody come to me with something that's like, I can't even wrap my mind around that. It's so outside of what my mind can. But remember, we have only so much we can understand, and scientific paradigms shift, our understanding shifts. So an open mind is something that I would suggest. Then I just gave you an example of how butterflies do it.
Yeah.
Let me give you another example. The when I was in when my mother was when my grandmother was pregnant with my mother, at the 4 month marker, the egg that turned into me developed in my mother. Yeah. So I shared space with my mother and my grandmother together for 5 months.
Wow.
So the information that my mother was experiencing, now we're talking more quantum physics here than we are Newtonian. Yeah. The experience my mother was having, I was swimming in all of that, the energetic stew of all of that.
Yeah.
And I was also developing in the energetic stew that my grandmother was living in at the time. So that's interesting. Sharing
that space interesting.
With two different pieces of two different generations at once.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to take you to the next level. My grandmother was in her grandmother for 5 months. So she shared space with her grandmother. And so now we're talking about sharing space with a bunch of different grandmothers energetically.
Yeah.
From a quantum point of view. Remember, I said from the quantum point of view, you can access past, present, and future all at once. And I just gave you a beautiful example of how that works.
That is absolutely fascinating.
I told you, I can't understand stuff that's woo-woo unless it's grounded somewhere. And so, when I experienced that, I knew my experience was real when I had it from ancestor clearing, but I wanted to know what's the backstory. I know there's a backstory here, and I knew my, and it was enough for me. It didn't feel like it was woo-woo at all for me because I had a lived experience. And then I saw all these people around me also having the experience. So it was like, okay, I got that this is real. And then it was kind of like, well, what do we know about this anyway? Right. So it's kind of like, what's your perspective on life? What's your perspective on life? That air, that molecule of, or that atom of air that you, of oxygen that you just breathed in the last breath you took. How many different critters and living beings and storms and places do you think that and trees and everything else do you think that oxygen molecule of that oxygen atom was before it got to you?
Wow, I never thought of that.
Yeah, and it came from the sun. So it had to come from the sun to Earth, and then it's been around, it's been just recycling on the planet. Right. So there's a lot of information in our system and we're just starting to scratch the surface of it.
Yeah.
We're ancestral beings on many levels. We're star stuff for real.
Yeah.
And we just keep transforming from one thing to another. I'm not the same person I was yesterday because I ingested a whole bunch of food yesterday and it transformed into who I am today, and I'll release some of that which no longer serves me, and then I'll bring in more today, and tomorrow I'll be a different person than I was today atomically.
Yeah.
So atomically means also energetically. So
yeah,
you see, we're these transient, our ancestors are in our bones one way or another. It just depends on how you're looking at it.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. I love those examples you gave. They're easy to understand and to kind of start to open people's, their mind, listeners' minds up a little bit, them have any questions about that. So in your book, The Way Through Chronic Pain, Tools to Reclaim Your Healing Power, you advocate for the power of self-healing. What are some key tools or practices you recommend for starting in this path?
Oh, yes. well, I would begin really with, as we said, becoming present. Remember we talked about chronic pain, people and their tendency to ruminate and worry and all those things. So we have difficulty. We have an argument with the present moment because we don't like how it's showing up. So we've built a habit of not wanting to be here. And so we're referencing the past or the future. And the healing is right here in the present moment. So what do you have to do in order to stay here? You have to practice being present. And what's the easiest way to do that? The easiest way is to focus on something that's always here with you as an anchor for the mind. And that would be the breath. Mm-hmm. It's always here. You just focus. The breath can be your mental anchor. You just keep your attention on the breath. Oh, wow. What a great exercise. I don't have to worry about anything. I can just keep my attention on the breath. Right? Now, the thing is we have this habit of referencing the past or the future and not wanting to be present. I don't even want to be in this body. That attitude, that habit. And so you're going to feel this, the momentum of that habit playing out in your life, because a habit has momentum to it. So for you to shift that momentum, you have to have a practice. You got to practice it. You got to practice every day. And what's interesting, so I'm talking about meditation, but I'm not giving it that label in case people freak out about that label. Just keeping your attention on, you know, it's a funny word, people, I can't even do it. Well, it's not as complicated as you think. It's the most natural thing in the world for us to do is just to be. But we're just so used to doing that we don't even know how to be anymore. And so here's the thing. When you sit and you do that practice, I'm just going to keep my attention on the breath. And I'm going to breathe normally, or I'm going to maybe breathe to a count of four, inhale, four, exhale, something consciously breathing, something nice and gentle. At some point, the mind is going to come in and try and pull your attention away from that, because it's like, well, we do this thing. This is not how we do life. We do life like this, right? And the habit is asserting itself. And all you want to do is get up from that practice. You know, you're just like, your body's going, I'm done with this. You know, when you see that resistance, you know, this is not how we do life. I want to get up and go, you know, come back to the breath. Mm-hmm. Just come back. The resistance is proof that your brain is rewiring.
Yep, it's working.
So that when you have that, you know, stay with it, because now you're cooking. Now you're shifting the momentum. So that's like a game changer right there. That and this other thing we talked about before, which was you are having experience of your pain, but it's not who you are. Mm-hmm. Get that witness consciousness. That meditation practice helps you with that witness consciousness. You practice that. And then it becomes this lived thing. Oh, I'm really not my pain. It's actually an experience I'm having, but it's not who I am. Meditation will give you a lived experience of that, so that you understand that as truth in your bones. And now we've got momentum that's unstoppable in terms of healing.
Yeah. That sort of reminds me a lot of Dr. Joe Dispenza's.
Yeah.
His programs, yeah, and his meditations and how he overcame a pain too. Mm-hmm. So definitely definitely reference versus that.
Yeah,
so.
Joe Dispenza's work's amazing. It's a little different than mine, but it's based on the same premise that, you know, what's your reference? You got to change your reference point, you know? Yeah.
Got to start with the change. That's the biggest thing. It's really just starting and accepting, like, I need a change in their life.
Yes, and that's another conundrum that can really trip a chronic pain sufferer up, because remember the worry and the fretting and the catastrophizing and the rumination about the future. The mind can come in and say, if I try something different, it might get worse.
Yep.
That's a tendency because of that negative mind. So when you sit in front of a chronic pain person realize how courageous they are to be able to stand in the heat of the fire and take a chance that the fire might get worse. And they take the chance anyway. That's some serious courage there. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Speaking of chronic pain, you emphasize that chronic pain is not a life sentence. Can you share a success story where someone overcame a long-term pain through the modalities that you practice?
Me.
Yeah, the best example.
I suffered with 40 years of chronic pain, and the modalities that I talk about are the ones that I use to heal from that. Dr. Peter Preskopf, he was the guy that really helped me get off the medication and took me through his pain management program, where I met John Newton, by the way. His name was Dr. Peter Preskopf. He wrote this book, Conquer Chronic Pain, okay, and an Integrative Mind-Body Approach. He passed away in, I think it was 2017, but he left us this beautiful book, and my book is like a companion to it. So he had a holistic viewpoint, and he wanted to know who I was. He wasn't just really interested in my back. So we had a couple things that happened in terms of healing chronic pain space, where I came from and where I ended up. Was one, my doctors made the assumption I wouldn't heal. They never asked the question, why isn't she healing? They just assumed I wouldn't. So that's not really a space where a patient can get much leverage in their own healing if you're just sitting in that perspective, right?
Right.
And the other thing was that I remember if you took three different people and they all had my x-rays, and you're just looking from the perspective of the x-ray, this reductionist Western model, non-integrated model, you'd find one patient that have x-rays just like me, one patient that has pain all the time, one that has pain only when they're stressed, and one that doesn't have any pain at all. How do you explain that just looking at the x-ray? You can't.
Right.
So something else is going on. Peter understood, Dr. Peter Preskopf, he understood the nature of chronic pain in the brain, which is something these other doctors that were focused on my back, they didn't get that part. They just didn't have the education. That's all. He was a specialist in neurophysiologist, and he studied chronic pain, and he understood all that. Mm-hmm. So, and that was only fairly recently. He studied, 2000, the years like 2000 up, and I met him in 2013. So all those years before that, that knowledge was just not there. So again, scientific paradigm shift. This was another thing that kept me hoping, that gave me hope as I went through my journey, was we're going to have more information. This is the only information we have right now. There's more information out there coming. We just don't see it yet. Right. So hanging on to hope is a big piece of self-healing, understanding the perspective that everybody, that whoever you're sitting in front of, the perspective they have, what they bring to the table, what they can't bring to the table, where are we healing? We're healing in the all that is, not just from that perspective. It gives you a more space for your journey.
Yeah, and I think I personally think it's super important when you're going through this healing journey to really look at your surroundings, who you're surrounding yourself with. Mm-hmm. Are you surrounding yourself with the negative pessimisticness of things, or are you surrounding yourself with people who do have hope that can help, that can guide you through that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things that's interesting to talk about chronic pain in this space, the intuitive space, is that when we're in that fight, flight, hypervigilant mode, we're actually just in the reptilian space. We can't access the intuition because we're running and fighting. So one of the things that's really cool about healing in this space is we get in touch with the intuitive, that intuition again. And I feel like I was really blessed in that kind of dark night of the soul experience I had about, you're going to be, this is your life, the rest, you know, in pain for the rest of your life, kind of thing, where I had that download after about 2 weeks. That was intuitive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So somewhere in there, I had just enough grace and space in the moment to be able to grasp onto that and find some leverage in my own healing journey. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really what this show is about, is having people to just to open up and start listening to it. Because if you hadn't, you'd just be like, well, that's just, you know, just nonsense. I don't know what this is going on inside of me. I'm just going to continue to go down the path that was told that that was going to be my entire journey the rest of my life. And so when people start tapping in and really listening to what's being told to them with their bodies, there's so many more possibilities that open up. So many different directions they can take. So
exactly.
So you mentioned the importance of preventing relapse and addiction recovery. What are some effective practices you found in your work that support sustained recovery?
Oh boy. Yeah, that's kind of the work of my life at this point. What are those practices? Because I've always got my eye and ear out for, you know, what can help with that. So first of all, we want to be in community with people that are also doing this work. As you said before, you want to be surrounded by people that are positive and that are interested in healing. And there are recovery communities that are just so they're just primed for that. They're beautiful for that. So you get in community. It's really important. Another one is showing up every day some kind of a daily spiritual practice. That can look like a little yoga, some meditation, some chanting, prayer, reading spiritual text, something where you're showing up for yourself every day. No matter what, you're showing up for yourself. What does that accomplish? Well, it accomplishes you beginning to trust yourself.
Right.
Building your confidence, right? That right there is a very steadying force in your life. So, and then what that practice looks like, you know, get with a recovery coach and help, you know, or a sponsor, whatever, whoever you want to work with, and figure out what that morning practice, what that needs to look like for you now. And that morning practice may change in 3 months or 2 weeks or next year, might change. But you still have your morning practice. That's the thing. You still have something. You show up for yourself. That's how you start your day.
I love that. And it also, I think that also helps you learn how to start relying on outside sources for help. I think as addiction, I'm fortunate that I've never had to experience that, but I have family members and friends that went through down that path where that's just like it was almost their source of everything. You know, it's like that was their safety blanket. So it's almost like replacing that safety blanket with something that's more safe, more healthy. Well,
you want to be able to, you want to be able to get trust yourself, and you want to get in community with other people that are, and find out what they're doing that's working for them, and take their suggestions. Do what they tell you to do, because the path is known. It's a question of applying. So, I mean, that you know, we could spend a long time on this question.
Yeah.
There are many, you know, there's a 12-step path for people. Not everybody takes that, but that provides a beautiful strategy for people to solve problems in their life. But that's the big thing. You want community. You want to take the suggestions. You want to have a morning practice. You want to learn how to be present. Again, that becoming present is just huge. Yeah.
So the concept that the greatest healer lives within each of us is powerful. How do you guide your clients to tap into their inner healing power, and what transformations have you witnessed?
Oh, well, okay. So, So here's the interesting thing. The problem that I had, and I'm not the only one, it started when I was little, and every time I would get sick, I would see my parents reference the doctor or the nurse or you know, somebody else, not here, right, outside. So that was, so it was like, oh, healing, I need to reference something out there in order to like solve this problem, this mm-hmm. illness problem. So that was the general, that was the habit, looking out.
Right.
But here's the thing. Doctors can set a bone and they can stitch up a wound, but they can't tell the body how to heal. They can only give you suggestions for the best possible, the best knowledge that they know to provide the best circumstances for healing, but the body does the healing. And that's another one of those really important pieces, like, I'm not my pain, I'm having experience of it, but it's not who I am. This thing, the healing power lives within you. It's just kind of, you just need to, you know, reorient kind of where's the healing coming from. And then we don't end up in a codependent relationship with our healthcare people.
Right.
Right. We see them as human.
Which happens a lot. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially when you're searching for something and it's just not happening. So you keep searching for the answers and yeah, with these trusted advisors, which they are trusted advisors, we really rely on them for everything.
Well, yes, and we'll just understand that understanding that principle was, at this point, I take 20% of the responsibility for my healing goes to the whole healthcare community, just all. Mm-hmm. And the other 80% is between me and that intelligence inside. So that's kind of how I break that down.
Yeah, it's like when you gather information from something, you learn something new. It's like that 20%. Then it's like, well, how does this apply to me?
Exactly.
And how do I use this for my body?
Yeah.
I love that. That's actually fascinating to think about it that way. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I love that. With your holistic approach to well-being, how do you see the future of healing chronic pain and addiction evolving, especially considering the advances of both science and spiritual practices?
Oh, well, we go from that reductionist model to the integrated, right? So we go from this, oh, it's all in the back, but we have three different results with the same people with the same x-ray, that reductionist model. We go into the integrated model, which is like when I met Dr. Peter Prescott, he's like, I don't need to look at your x-rays. I don't want to see your records. I want to know who you are.
Ooh, yeah.
I was like, you know, really? Who are you? What? Where have you been all my life? It's like, oh, doctor had never asked me that question before. It was so strange. It was great, but integrated. So it's an integrated model where you're taking into account mind, body, and spirit are one. You can't separate them. So what you do to one, you do to all. Yeah, that's the dichotomy. We're moving from reductionist to this integrated model.
It's almost like we're taking a step backwards to where we used to be.
Exactly.
It's like we try to go so far in advance with, you know, all this technology, all this stuff. And it's like, that's really cool. I mean, it's definitely helped. Like but then it's kind of like, now we're like, well, I think we're at the end of this and we're just shoving and making robots out of ourselves with things. And so now we're going to take a step back and let's get back into like what happened like 5,000 years ago or even 3,400 years ago. You know, what were people putting in their bodies? How were they healing themselves? We're going, you know, going back to just old principles.
Well, the Yoga Sutras are the yogas like, you know, looked at like 5,000 years old. And science is now just starting to catch up to how come yoga works. Yeah. It just has different words but it's all in the Yoga Sutras. It's all sitting right there. So now there's nothing wrong with understanding the mechanism of a certain pathway in the body. I understand all that. And it's part of an integrated system. So you might be able to isolate a certain pathway. This pathway does this. And we need to have it in the context of what else is happening in relation to it. Right. And that's the really direction that science is heading in this, instead of this reductionist model, this more integrated, how does it fit into the whole system? Yeah, the systems approach.
Yeah, I think there's lots of changes coming. People are looking for new old methods of healing, for sure. Yeah.
Well, the more that we, I feel like, you know, studying the science that I've looked at, it just seems like the more we discover, the more we realize we don't know. And the more we realize how complicated things really are and how simple they are. So there's a lot of different ways that you can kind of get you can look at the scientific information, and there are ways you can kind of get hung up, and there are ways that you can oh, well, it's really showing us that we don't know as much as we think we know, and it's really showing us that it's way more complicated than we realize, and it's also showing us that things are much more simple. So there's a lot of that going on, and for me, it's been important to be able to take a step back and kind of see that, so that then when I sit and read a scientific paper, I've got a little bit better grounding in kind of what's really happening.
Absolutely. Well, this has been so fascinating. I've always learned stuff from podcasts, but I've absolutely learned and loved. I've loved this podcast, this everything we've talked about. So thank you so much for coming on. Of course, all your information, ways people could purchase your book and everything will be in the show notes too. So again, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, and I'm so grateful for your platform.